Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is presented by the Writers and Illustrators of the Future. They have been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today, I'm really happy to bring to you author Rachel Ann Cox. We're going to talk about writing and her new book and all things writing. Hi, Rachel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me on.
That was such a cute little entry. I had it in my head what I was going to say, and it just went whoosh. Sorry about that.
That's okay. It happens to me all the time.
First, thank you for coming on. Your book looks very interesting. I haven't read it yet, but it looks very interesting.
Thank you.
As you know, we have a lot of authors who listen to the show. What started you, well, first, were you a reader first? Were you a reader as a child?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. I have been reading for as long as I can remember. I remember Saturdays during the summers, like trying to read a whole entire stack of books for, you know, the summer reading programs and all of that. And I was definitely a reader first, but I also remember writing as a child. I think I wrote my first play when I was about 8, and I performed it for my family. So I think I've always been a writer somewhere, although I veered off the path for a little while, and I thought I was going to go into music and musical theater, but then I came back to writing, and so here we are.
Yeah, I'm split in a lot of different ways too. I write, I act, I produce, I do interviews. And it's, what's really strange is I never was really thinking, I did study journalism, but I never really was thinking of being an interviewer.
Right.
My father wanted to be a radio personality when he was a kid. He never did. And I thought, oh, okay. And it was after he passed on that I started doing this, sort of like I didn't even put the two and two together until my mother pointed it out.
That is interesting.
That's what I was going to say. Did your path go the way you expected?
Not at all. And, I think we try and plan our lives out and we think that it's going to go a certain way, and it never does. So, yeah, I was really, really into music all through my high school years and early college. And I loved, Broadway musicals and things, and I thought that's what I was going to do. And then I went to college to study musical theater, and I did it for 2 years, and I loved it, and I got a lot of experience. But then writing just became more, it just kind of came upon me in the middle of college, and I switched over to study English, and I got my bachelor's in creative writing and my master's in English, and it's like the first few English classes that I took in the program, I felt like, yes, this is it, this is the path that I want to be on, and it just felt right. And so, but it wasn't what I had planned. It's not what I went to college to study initially.
Yeah, and like you said, I wanted to be an archaeologist. I studied it. I went to college for it.
That's amazing.
Just ran out of money.
Yeah.
I've been there out there digging for something in Egypt or something, for something here in California. I would never have been on this path if I had the money to finish get my doctorate.
Isn't that funny how that plays a role?
Oh, money's very important.
Yeah.
I mean, my parents helped me go through community college. I inherited some money from my grandmother that got me through my bachelor degree, but then I just didn't have enough money to go on to any of, master's or doctorate. And you have to be an archaeologist. You cannot really be an archaeologist. That's the way the pattern is set up. You have to have a doctorate.
Yeah.
And there's no other choice. It's either you're a laborer or you have a doctorate. That's it.
That's it. Those are your choices.
Yeah. So I became a writer. And guess what?
And,
I'm actually writing an archaeology book. Not a book about archaeology, but a thriller with an archaeologist in it.
That's fantastic. But, you know, isn't it a different kind of digging, though, even though it's writing, but it's just a psychological digging rather than a physical digging, right?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is that I still kept on I was always writing. I was still acting. I was making a living as an actor, too. And so I was doing a lot. I was very diverse. People were like, including my parents, even though they were super supportive, they said, what does archaeology, acting, and writing have in common? And I said, what makes people tick? That's what they have in common. Which
exactly.
My parents accepted immediately. But don't you think that that's what it's all about? Because you were in musical theater, which is acting, and you were writing stories. But it's all about what makes those characters tick.
Oh, absolutely. And I think I was reminded of my writing passion through studying acting even and taking some directing classes and some acting classes. And I was thinking about that as we're building characters to put on the stage, how similar that is to building characters in a book, you know. So, yeah, it's all about what makes people tick and what their motivations are.
And it's also... And it's interesting because there's so much formation of information that I get from not just watching people and listening and stuff like that, and that most authors get. I get a lot from watching documentaries that people because it will spark something and I'll say, ooh, now that's interesting.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
You get that?
I do, and I get a lot from, I read a lot of biographies and nonfiction and memoirs and things, and I get a lot from those readings as well, you know, just things that you wouldn't think that would give you inspiration. You know, I sometimes use a hashtag in my Instagram of saying, you know, inspiration is everywhere. It is. It's
exactly.
Everywhere. If you know where to look for it, you're watching people. And you're going to find some kind of inspiration everywhere around you if you're looking for it.
I think that's one of the things that's so drawing about theater is that the inspiration of theater is because not only are you watching a wonderful play with wonderful actors saying wonderful words by a wonderful playwright there. I got everybody in credit. directed too. And produced. Got to get everybody in there. But it's also really, the reason actors love it is because you have a relationship with the audience. There's a it's osmosis. It's not, you don't see it, you just feel it. It's not because it's dark theater, you can't see anything, but you can feel when an audience is with you, and it just inspires you to give a really great performance, and you're inspiring the audience at the same time because they're going on this path of a journey that they never would take normally. So it's like a mutual thing, and I think theater is a very important thing that we shouldn't let it be thrown to the wayside because of money or anything like that, because it's an inspiration as a writer, as an actor, as a normal human being. Very important. Did you find that was what inspired one of the things that inspired you to write your novel?
Not this novel particularly, but to start a novel, yes. I always am energized after I go see a live performance of a play or a musical, and so I always find myself inspired by things like that. But then, too, I was reading some, I was reading, again, some nonfiction pieces about what's called Boston marriages, and that's what my first novel was about. And so that was what got me on the path again of writing, and especially longer pieces like novels and things. I had written short stories and some poems and things along the way, but it really got me back into doing these longer projects. And so, yes, theater was indirectly involved in getting me back into writing, yes.
And it's interesting that you wouldn't think that, because you were acting. You weren't writing. You didn't write the play.
There is a creative element there. Even though I didn't write the words on the page, there's that creative element of you are creating this character from just the words on the page. And so you have to bring an element of yourself to whatever character that you're playing.
Exactly. And it's bristling with creativity. If it's a good company and you're on stage, are you doing a radio play? I do radio plays here on my show. If you're with a good company, it just bristles. You can just feel it that it's going well.
You can feel it, yeah. Absolutely.
Even in rehearsal, you just know it because it's just, it's on every level. And that's one of the things that inspires me as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But it's interesting, though, because being a writer is somewhat, it's a solitary existence and lonely in a lot of ways. You're there with your computer or your paper by yourself hashing out these scenes with these characters, and you're not sure if it's going to take and if it's going to go well. And you don't have that engagement with other people until later on in the process.
That's true. It's very different. I mean, I write plays and radio plays and stuff like that, but it's the same thing. I mean, nobody really knows what I'm writing.
Right.
Just me. You know, and I'm sure and even if you're writing poetry and you do poetry readings every week, you're still alone. You're still there facing that blank page. It's that blank page thing. That blank page psychology.
Blank page. It's a scary thing.
When you write, do you have total silence? Do you have music? Do you go outside? What's your environment?
I always have to have music. I can't do anything without music on. And so I have a playlist for just about every activity that I do. And so I'll usually put on some kind of like film scores or classical music in the background or something that sets the mood for whatever I'm writing. And I'm always out in nature. I go for walks every day. And so a lot of my thinking process happens while I'm out on my walks, and I'll just take notes in my phone or in a notebook. And so as I'm starting a process or a project of writing, then I'm taking notes all the time. So the scenes usually come to me with dialogue first, and I'll see my characters first, and then I start putting them in their environment and things. And so I'm constantly taking notes. And then it's just an organization process of doing the outline and then finally sitting down to write the chapters. But there's a lot of simmering that happens in my brain while I'm writing or while I'm doing like mindless tasks and things. And so I'll just get an inspiration for a scene and I'll jot it down real fast in a notebook. But yeah, I find that music helps to set whatever mood that I'm trying to achieve.
Do you find yourself doing things? Okay. Like, I was feeding my cat the other day. I'm working on a novel and I'm very close to the end. I'm in the editing, and I was trying to figure out something, whether I was going to change, like, a part of the novel. And as I was working it out, instead of giving her food, I almost put it in the refrigerator. And she's like,
"No, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, your poor cat.
She's hilarious. She's like, "Wow!" And she like sat in front of me. She started like, pulling with her claw on my pants leg. She pulled the pants leg with her claw, and she's like, "Meow, meow!" Pushing it. Okay, I got it. is looking at me now. She's like, "What are you?"
She's like, "Are you talking
for?
About me?" She can tell that you're talking about her.
She can. She has her head tilted. Said, "Mommy, stop talking about me." Sorry, I'm a new kitten owner. I've only had her for 9 months. I've only had her for 4 months. So she's a baby.
Aww.
And I almost put her food in the refrigerator because I was too busy thinking about characters.
She would not have been happy about that.
She wasn't.
But
have you ever done that? I mean, have you like been driving somewhere and like drove past where you're going to go? Nothing dangerous.
Yes.
You just like missed the turn off because, or you didn't turn down the right street, or you just went to a wrong place.
Absolutely. Just because you're in your head with your characters. Absolutely. I'll do things and I'll find my keys in the freezer or something. And just because you're so engrossed with your characters. Yes. What's funny is that I find that most of my inspiration though comes when I'm doing like mindless things that I do every day. And so if I'm, you know, putting my makeup on in the morning or, you know, getting ready for bed at night, that's when the inspiration will hit because I don't have to think about what I'm doing. And so my mind automatically goes to whatever novel I'm working on and my characters.
Yeah. And it's like, what am I doing today? Okay. Boop, just starts going.
Yep.
Now this is something I always love to talk to writers about because I think only really writers understand it. When you're working on a book and your character like takes off and goes in a direction you weren't planning on it, do you allow it or do you push it back where you want it to go? I have my own theory, but I want to hear what you say first.
Okay. I have had both experiences. With my first novel, I thought, you know, I'm the writer and I will tell this character what to do. And I tried to force it and it didn't work out well. And so now I'm having to rewrite that first novel because I didn't let the characters dictate to me what they wanted to do. With this novel, with A Light from the Ashes, I decided to just let it be organic and let the characters tell me. So I had a general plan of what I wanted to happen, but there were definitely scenes where I didn't plan for a certain character to be in a scene and they would just show up, you know, and I'm like, oh, hey, what are you doing here, you know? And so I just decided to go with it, and I feel like that makes a more organic and a more relatable story, and it's almost like your subconscious or your inspiration or whatever you want to call it, your muse is writing the story, and I just sometimes when I get in the zone, I feel like I'm just the vessel. It's just passing through me. I don't feel like it's
mm-hmm.
coming directly from my brain.
That's
the golden
hour
for me.
Somewhere else. I think we are
vessels. Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't think anybody does, but I don't really understand. But I learned a long time ago, if you try to fight, they will make a crappy story for you. So you don't fight.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I feel like we have to go with it because on some level, like our subconscious minds know where the story is going to go and have a better sense of it. And we should just let it flow and do what it's going to do.
I've just finished writing a radio play that's the second part of a radio play from last year, which is called Joe Cronus. And the second part went really weird and really dark. And I'm like, and I don't even know where that came from because I wasn't even in that place at that moment. But the characters were.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that?
I had it with this book. Yeah, I had it with this book. There were times where things had to happen, and the characters were saying, this is what's happening. It's almost like they're telling me the story of their lives, and I'm just listening and writing it down. And so I'm like, there were times when I didn't want to write certain scenes. I was like, I don't want to do this, and I'm crying as I'm writing it. I'm like, I don't want to do this to my characters. But it's just the way that the story was writing itself, and it just had to go there. And so, yeah, there are some dark places in this book, and some people have even commented on it that it's dark. But I feel like it doesn't end in a dark place, and that's always important to me, that I don't want to leave people depressed with my writing. I want to give them some kind of hope. But, yeah, there are many times where it'll just go off in a direction that I wasn't planning.
It's weird, isn't it? It's like people who don't write, it's you. What do you mean you're doing something you don't want to do? It's your story. It's from your head. You don't understand.
You don't understand. Like, yeah, these characters have lives of their own, and we're just eavesdropping.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, it's sort of like one of those movies where people are, like, using electronics to, voyeuristically live
yes.
somebody's life, except we're not using electronics, we're not voyeuristic, because we're not actually, I can't talk today, I'm sorry, but we're not actually eavesdropping on anybody. It's all in your head, but it's like,
yeah.
Does that
but
make
it
sense?
Feels the same way. You do. You feel like you're eavesdropping. It feels a little weird at times.
Yeah. I was like, when I, like, the play that I was talking about, I told the some of the actors that are coming back, and I said, it's really dark, and they're going, good! Going, okay.
Yes. That's true.
The actor's dark. They love that.
No.
That's the stuff that drama is.
Absolutely. It's all about the drama and the conflict. And you have to put your characters through hell sometimes for the conflict and the drama and all of that. And but like I said, as long as it turns out somewhat okay in the end, then I'm okay with it being dark in the middle.
Not happy, but positive.
Positive. Something with a yes, exactly. Not everything's going to have a happy wrapped up with a bow ending, but at least in a positive vein.
I know. It's weird. And you never know where your mind's going, where your characters are going to go, really. They're just, like I said, they have minds of their own, and they lead you by a chain. Come on!
It's true. And I try to explain that to people. And I had a friend one time, because I had to kill off a couple of characters in one of my stories, and a friend of mine called me, I think, the sadistic Jane Austen, because I was killing off my characters, but, I wasn't killing them. They were just telling me their stories.
That's another thing that it's just interesting. Your friends, especially your really good friends, and they read it, and they're like, this came from you?
Yeah.
I've had that happen a few times. It's like the total reverse of your personality. Is this your dark side or something? I go, no, it has nothing to do with me.
Yes, exactly.
Like, what do you mean
it has nothing to do with me?
With you.
Yes.
You know,
no, it's true.
And you're like, yeah, it has nothing to do with me. It's not me. It's not my life. It's just what I'm writing.
And even though, one of your characters may have, a certain belief or, behavior, that doesn't mean that that's something that you subscribe to, That doesn't mean that that's something that you believe in necessarily.
No, a lot of, especially if it's a bad guy, I don't believe
absolutely.
In anything that I believe in.
Exactly.
The only part of me that's a little mean is that if someone in my past, and I don't mean like last week, I mean in my past, treated me badly, they do kind of end up being some of the bad guys in my books and stories.
Yeah, I get that. I do. But, don't we draw on our lives for everything? For all of the writing, we pull it from something or some experience that we've had. So, even though my characters may not be a direct translation of someone that I knew, there's some experience that I've had that has played into what I've written, and that helps me reach a certain emotion or something for my characters. And so I feel like I'm a very empathetic person, and so I can try. Basically, it's like I'm living another life. So while I'm writing whatever story, I'm living through it as much as my characters are living through it, and I'm experiencing their emotions in a very real way. And so sometimes I have to take a break and put it aside for a minute so I can, you know, have my real emotions about my real life and not about the lives of my characters.
Oh, I put it away for like a day or 2 days because of something really, really emotional in one of my writings, because it really affects you. You have to step back and say, okay, that's them. This is me. We're separate. We're not the same.
Exactly. But it can be emotionally exhausting. It can.
Yeah, exactly. You need to go and do something. Oh, we were talking about it in the green room. We both have one of our favorite shows are the same that I don't know about you, but when I get really into one of those moods, I flip on my DVD, Miss Fisher.
Absolutely. 100%. Miss Fisher is one of my go-to shows to make me feel better.
Yeah, exactly. Miss Fisher, Murder Mysteries. Because it's just fun. It's
just fun.
It's so much, I mean, yeah, somebody gets killed, but it's not, they never have gruesome, and they always have a happy ending.
Yes, and Miss Fisher is just so
amazing
and life-affirming of a character, you know, like, she just makes you excited about life.
She is like the kind of person you would like to be as a woman, you know, totally
absolutely
independent, have their own way, their own set of values, and they don't, like she says, she doesn't apologize.
Nope, she just lives her life as she wants to live it, and she looks great doing it.
Oh yeah, the
yeah
clothes.
I want to be Miss Fisher when I grow up.
And we were also talking about Jack.
Oh, Jack.
Dear Jack.
Inspector Robinson.
Detective Inspector Jack Robinson.
Absolutely.
Very,
he is great.
He started at the beginning, I didn't know if I would like him because he was so cold. But
yeah,
by the end of that first episode, he sort of loosened up a little bit. But the next episode, that was Jack.
Yeah. And I love how you can see him being amused by Phryne and just kind of, he doesn't want to like her as much as he does. He wants
exactly
to be, you know, he wants to put up that wall, but she won't let him keep the wall up. And I love to watch her break down his walls. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I know. And in the second episode, you actually see that start to crumble. It hit when he rolled his eyes and he's like, okay, fine. I'll let you come into the car, the train, because you're going to bother me if I don't. If you talk about Masushi, you got to talk about Jack, because their dynamic is intertwined, and the way Carrie Greenwood created that is just, she created Jack in the books is very different, but the friendship and him becoming her friend and the slowness of how he trusts her completely by the second book is the same as the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he starts to realize that she actually has, she's got skills, and she has things that she can add to his skills, and that, you know, sometimes he can't do it without her, and I love that.
Me too. And I also love that he's only saved her twice.
Amen. She is not a damsel in distress by any means.
No. She saved herself, and really the first time she was, she took that terrible drug, so she was unable to do anything.
Exactly. But even with her taking that terrible drug, she's still standing up to the bad guy and protecting Jane and Jack and everybody else.
Yep. It's a great concept, and it's great to go to when things are a little tough.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I absolutely agree.
Yeah. I love that show.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
So now we're at the point where I want you to talk about your new book, explain up to the point where you can, without giving spoilers or anything. What is?
Okay. So it's a dystopian novel set 40 years in the future in America, but America is not as we know it now. And so we've lost electricity, we've lost the internet, and there's a dictatorship in place, and martial law is in place. There's a new army. And so the main characters in A Light from the Ashes are the children of former revolutionaries. And so there was a disaster that happened that in 2020 in the story, and then that kind of kicks off a series of revolutions. And so the main characters in my story are the third generation of revolutionaries, but they're small in number, and they're fighting, you know, this huge force and trying to take their lives back, basically. And so it's a story of humanity and hope and fighting for freedom. And it's things that are very applicable to our lives now, even though the world looks vastly different. So that's kind of the gist of it. Sam is the main character, and he has, there's sort of a love triangle, but not your typical love triangle happening because if I had to be specific, it's not really a triangle. It's more like a quadrangle, really. And so there's several layers of secondary and major characters. So there are two women that Sam has loving feelings towards, but then, you know, one of them has another guy, and so there's a lot of mixed up characters and relationships in the midst of them just trying to survive.
Wow. It sounds like a real tangle. Really cool.
It is very much a tangle.
That's what I call it. It's like a puzzle. That's one of the things about writing.
That's a good way to put it. It's a puzzle.
It's a puzzle. You have to put it together. And you don't know what it's going to look like until you have all the pieces in place.
Exactly.
That's what I try to explain to people that are friends that aren't writers, and they say, I don't understand. You say the book's going to be, and then it's not. Isn't it in your head? Don't you have it all drawn up? And I'm like,
not necessarily.
And I'm like, that's why I call it a puzzle. Because even though I will go back to a chapter and realize, oh no, there's something, like, I actually am restructuring one of the books that was supposed to come out in November because it needed something. So I had it's a children's book. And between chapters, the main character I want her to express more of what's going on and from her point of view. So I put journal entries as like a little opener for each chapter.
Nice.
So I have actually going back, even though it's all written out, it's been edited like four times and all kinds of stuff. I decided it needs it. It has to have her point of view, or people are just not going to understand it. Even though her point of view is in the description and dialogue, it needed more. So it's
right.
You sometimes that happens. It's not set in cement. Nobody says you have to do it this way. You wrote it, you finished it, you edited it, so that's it. Not necessarily.
Not until it's published can you say that it's done. You know, because up until the moment that you hit publish, then, you know, you've got the right to change whatever you need to change.
Like I said, that last puzzle piece, until that last puzzle piece is in, it's not done.
Right. I agree.
I mean, and that came out of left field. I was not expecting it. I was just going through the edits, double-checking stuff, you know. And I was, like, thinking as I'm rereading it, and you know how many times as an author you reread your book?
Oh, absolutely.
You're almost saying the words without looking at the paper because you've read it so many times.
Well,
but as I was rereading,
the last editing, yeah.
What were you going to say?
No, I was going to say the last editing round that I went through with my book, I was telling a friend of mine, I was like, I can't read this anymore. I cannot read this book one more time. Even though I love it and I love my characters and I wrote it, I just don't think I can read it one more time because I've read it hundreds of times through each editing, you know, iteration. And so, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, and some of my my books, I couldn't read it. Like, my first book, after I had my first editor was more like Simon Legree than an editor.
No.
Yeah, so I was like, I don't even know if I want to publish because the way that he's talking to me, that it's just crap, so why am I even bothering? My father was still alive. Says, honey, it's your book. He's supposed to be working for you. If you're not comfortable with him, fire him and find another editor. But he's supposed to be, and he goes, it doesn't matter. He goes, it's like you have to fit together. It's like a partnership.
Sure, it's like any other, it's any other relationship. Like, you have to be able to work with that person, and it's a give-and-take relationship. And if it's not, even if they're great, you know, and they may be great with somebody else's work, if they're not working for you, then it's okay to, you know, take a step back and say, all right, let me find somebody that's going to work well with me.
And also because everybody's personality is different, you know?
Exactly.
I can make criticism, but I hate it when they make it, well, like, I'm messing up. Instead of saying, okay, this isn't working, well, you screw that all up. That's me. I am very sensitive, and like I said, constructive criticism, okay, this isn't working, you need to move this over here. That I can take beautifully, no problem, I don't get any kind of emotional reaction. You screwed this up, that shouldn't even be there, blah, blah, blah. Then it's a personal thing.
Yeah,
and
you don't want it to be a personal attack.
That's what it felt like with this first editor. This is a long time, my father was still alive. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
But it was. I still remember the feelings I got from this guy saying it like that. I mean, this was every edit.
My goodness, that would be exhausting. That would be emotionally exhausting.
Exactly. That's why it's like I was going to just give up on the book.
Oh, no. No, I think if you feel like writing is your passion, then you just have to stick with it and not, you know, let what anybody else says, you know, make a difference in the sense of whether or not you're going to write the book. Because like your father said, it's your book. At the end of the day, your name is the one that's going to be on it, and it's your book.
Exactly. That was my lesson that I learned, and that was from my dad.
Fantastic. It's a good lesson.
He was a great editor, but he wouldn't do it.
yeah.
My dad used to get a book, and he would see every mistake. And this is, like, published from big publishing houses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Till the end of his life, he would sometimes take a yellow marker and go, zip. I'm like, what are you doing, studying? And he goes, no, I'm just marking the mistakes. My dad.
Yep.
I'm just amusing myself, is what he said.
Now, I also read with a pen in my hand, and maybe that's a throwback from the years of college and, you know, reading novels for my major and things, but I can't read without a pen in my hand anymore, but I'm marking things that I like, but also I will ask questions in the margins. I'll write things down like, why did the author put this here? And why aren't they doing this? And why didn't they move this paragraph over here? And so I'm looking at it with a writer's eye now in a way, and I can't go back to being just a passive reader. I'm now always going to be an active reader no matter what.
Do you ever finish a novel? I do this all the time. Do you ever finish a novel and it's not quite where you want it to end? So even though this is from a famous author and a famous story, in your head, you won't do it out loud or anything, but just so for your own peace of mind, you finish it the way you want it to finish.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, 100%. If I hate the ending, I'll rewrite it in my head.
Oh, I do that all the time. I will finish a book, put it down, and then I will, like, make dinner or whatever I'm doing, and my head is going with, well, okay, then they do this, and I bring it to the point where it makes me happy.
Yes, I do.
That's the writer's mind.
I agree. That's absolutely
it. Really is. It's just like if you're... I'm not a screenwriter, but I have a lot of friends that are screenwriters. They will rewrite a movie they see. Not all of them, but a few of my friends.
Yeah.
They will watch a movie. They'll love the movie, but they will rewrite parts of it that they didn't think quite worked right or reshoot it in their head or just tell us how they would reshoot it. I've gone to dinner with one of my girlfriends who's a screenwriter, and we went to a movie, and we went to dinner after, and she will, like, okay, now, you know that scene? I loved it, but it just needed a little twist, and we had to move it like this. And I'm like, we just saw the movie. I know, but really.
But really, they should have done it like this. Yep, I've done that too.
Oh, but I'm not a screenwriter, but I do that with books and plays. I do that with plays.
Mm-hmm.
Not plays I'm acting in necessarily, but plays that I go see. You know what I mean?
Sure,
yeah. On stage or doing a radio play as opposed to being an audience member. It's like the book we were talking, you've read it so many times. If you wrote a play... or you're acting a play, you know that script backwards and forwards. You've written in every crevice of your script. You're not going to do that.
No, yeah. But if you're just watching it, yeah. And I think I said this to my sister one time. I went to see a movie with her, and she loved it, and she thought it was great, but she's not watching it with a writer's eye. And so I'm sitting there and I'm critiquing the whole thing in my head, and I'm like, oh, they should have done this, and the dialogue should have been this way or whatever. And so I've, in some ways I enjoy movies more now as a writer, and in some ways it's hard for me to enjoy movies that aren't up to snuff. You know, I used to have a lower standard of movies that I could watch and be okay with. And now I'm just like, no, they have to be top notch or I'm not even going to waste my time. I've become a little bit
weird?
Of a literature and a movie snob, a little bit.
Oh, I'm really not a snob. I talk to everybody equally and even, but I've been told that I'm an intellectual snob. I go, I'm not really an intellectual snob. I just think I think everybody has read the same books I have, even though I know that he has.
Yeah. Yes.
So I will start talking about Dickens or Austen or something like that.
Yes.
And not everybody's read Dickens or Austen.
I'm like, why don't you get my references to classic literature?
Or old movies. I mean,
yes,
certain movies.
Old movies. Oh, my goodness, old movies.
I love old movies. And, like, Young Frankenstein references fly between my brother and I because we're both huge Mel Brooks fans. A friend is
yes.
over who's never seen it. They're like, what are you guys talking about?
No, yeah. And my friends and I, we speak in movie quotes to each other, and a lot of times old movies and and song lyrics.
It's just weird. It's one of those things that you have to be a writer.
Yes.
We've come to the end. I want people to be able to get in touch with you. Could you give your website, if you have one, or any social media that you have that you, so people can come and say hi?
Absolutely. So I'm basically Rachel Ann Cox Writer across the board on all of the things. So on Facebook, you can type in at Rachel Ann Cox Writer. That's RachelAnneCox Writer, WRITER. Or Instagram, Rachel Ann Cox Writer. And also my website is www.rachelanncoxwriter.com. So it's pretty easy to remember because it's the same across the board.
Okay. And do you have any kind of signings or conventions or anything like that that you're going to make an appearance at?
Yes. I will have a book launch party on this Friday, October 18th, from 5 to 8 at Three Goats Gruff Bookstore in Brigham City, Utah. And I will be signing books there and doing a reading and taking some questions and things, and we'll have just a fun little party there on Friday, and anybody is welcome who is in the northern Utah area, or heck, even if you wanted to come from not the northern Utah area and you wanted to come see me there, that's where I'll be.
Okay. I want to thank you for coming on the show. It was really fun.
Thank you so much, Sherry. It's been great talking with you.
Thank you, and thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Absolutely.